This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The Voice of America Bethany Station is celebrating its 75th year and its long connection to an American institution. The anniversary comes as a Cincinnati native takes on the role as White House correspondent for the still-running Voice of America. I spoke with National Voice of America Museum of Broadcasting Director Jack Dominick and VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman earlier. Voice of America White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman joins us now on the phone from the White House. Welcome, Steve.
Good morning.
And in the studio is VOA Museum Director Jack Dominick. Welcome, Jack.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right, before we get rolling in this interview, I want to note that Steve is a Cincinnati native now based in Washington, D.C. Steve, what's your connections to the Queen City here?
Well, I'm a native of Cincinnati, and I went to LaSanaville Elementary School, and my family moved out from Cincinnati to Las Vegas in 1971. So you could say I spent my formative years there and my deformative years in Las Vegas.
Well, very fortunate for you. So look, last December, Steve, the Los Angeles Times published a story with the headline, quote, "Trump wants a government-run media outlet. He's ignored the one he has so far." That article was about the Voice of America. Tell us what that means.
Well, Voice of America has been around since 1942, and it has always been government-run. And if you read some of the histories about VOA, as I usually put it, there's always been a struggle for the soul of VOA. It was very unique when it was set up because the Voice of America during World War II, broadcasting from there, as a matter of fact, was meant to give the news to the rest of the world, whether it was going to be good or bad. And that's always been the really our mission statement. And there have been those, both in Congress and in administrations, who have believed over the decades that really VOA should be more of an overt propaganda service, only tell good news about America and not reflect everything that that is really going on in the country. So I think every administration to some degree considers perhaps trying to tweak the U.S. government to broadcasters VOA and Radio Free Europe and Radio Free Asia. And then they're usually convinced that, look, this has worked since 1942. Our values as a democracy and a free press and a fair press really are what we're all about, and we shouldn't mess with that.
So the VOA then can be described as, while it is government funded, it is an independent news organization?
We have a firewall between us and any administration, but the Voice of America has always been and is 100% part of the federal government. At one point, it was part of the U.S. Information Agency under the State Department, and then it was cleaved away from USIA and State and was under something called the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which is now the U.S. Agency for Global Media, USAGM, and it is now. There's now an advisory board appointed by the president. It's like the FCC. It has to be half Republican, half Democrat. And a recent innovation is now there is a chief executive officer who is currently John Lansing, a veteran broadcaster, who is in charge of USAGM. That is also a presidential appointee, as are the director and deputy director of VOA. And those appointees who are in place are still holdovers from the Obama administration. And I can tell you that there's been no difference between the previous administration and this administration with our same appointees in place. And I can tell you, in fact, in all the years and decades that I've worked for VOA as either a freelance or a contractor, or a staff correspondent, no one has ever said to me, you have to report this story, or you cannot report this story, or you have to spin it a certain way. I used to work for the Associated Press, and our standards are very, very similar, and it's straight down the middle, if I can put it that way.
Well, I want to touch on that because you have worked for other media outlets, and then your work for the VOA has taken you around the world. You spent substantial time in Asia. What is different then about doing news for the Voice of America compared to commercial or other outlets?
Right. Well, it's really refreshing because we're not ratings driven. We don't have to worry about our broadcast getting higher ratings than some competitor, or these days, how many clicks did your story get to spice up that headline to make it something that'll really dazzle. And what I very much like about it is I have a very strong interest in geopolitics and global affairs. And that's who we're broadcasting to, the rest of the world. And what I'm covering when I was in Asia and what I'm covering now at the White House is very much a geopolitical in nature. We have 45 language services. So whether it's someone watching in Albania or listening to the radio in Zimbabwe, they want to know what's happening in this country and how it's going to affect them in their own country.
Steve Herman is not the only local connection of the Voice of America to this region. Jack Dominic is the VOA Museum Director. First, welcome back to the building, Jack. I know you spent some substantial time here as a manager over at WCET, our friends and neighbors here in the building. Now, the Voice of America Museum of Broadcasting came about in the 1990s. That was after the federal government decommissioned after its Bethany station transmitted VOA broadcasts for about 50 years or so. So give us the story of how that operation came to land in Westchester.
You mean the Voice of America transmitter, why it ended up
in
Westchester?
Yeah, how did this happen?
I can give you, it's three words.
Let's hear it.
Powell Crosley Jr.
Well, that's what I had in my notes. I had local broadcast legend Powell Crosley, for whom our building is named.
That's right.
Was part of that. So give us a little more than the three words.
Well, as Steve said, when the Voice of America was developed, and by the way, that discussion that you had with regards to what should the Voice of America be, you know, President Roosevelt really was thinking more in the propaganda area.
Well, this was a wartime.
Right.
Yeah.
But he kind of made a mistake, and some of the early people who were involved in the Voice of America, people like Edward R. Murrow and John Houseman, et cetera, they kind of said, Mr. President, we don't think that's a very good idea. We think we should be very, very straight, tell it out like it is. And as John Houseman said in one of his earlier discussions, most of the news that they reported in during the Second World War early on was bad. We were losing. But anyway, back to your question. It's here because when the federal government wanted to build a radio service that could reach around the world, remember, we're in the early 40s now, so a lot of technology was still being developed. And there were many, by the way, who thought that the transmitter needed to be in Greenland. I'm kind of delighted that it wasn't, in order to get a strong signal into Europe. However, here in Cincinnati, even before the Voice of America was even thought of, Powell Crosley already was involved in high-power transmitters. Of course, there's the iconic 500,000-watt AMWLW that ran in the late 30s into the early 40s. And so he already had the technical, or he had the engineers. It wasn't Powell himself. He had the engineers here who knew how to build large transmitters. Government wanted to do it in very, very short time period. It came to Cincinnati.
Cincinnati always finds its way into history, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So the museum and the site are celebrating 75 years.
That's right. Well, Voice of America, the site, 1944, this September 24th. But and it's been there. It closed down, as you well know. It went off the air in 1994, late 94, because shortwave as a technology was waning in and all of these new technologies were coming on board. So that's why it closed down. But as you well know, and as Steve Wells know, Voice of America is still alive and well, and I would say arguably more important now than it's ever been.
So what do people learn when they visit the museum?
Well, it's not a repository of old tubes. What we try to do is tell the stories. We had a gentleman the other day, or not the other day, it's about, a year ago. You know, he comes up to the door and he knocks on the door. We're not open during the day. We're not open during, but I went down. I said, I'm sorry, we're not open. We're open on weekends. Love to have you come by. He says, no. He says, I want to give you something. And I said, okay. So he goes out and he pulls this nondescript transistor radio out of his back of his trunk, and he brings it in, he gives it to me, and I think he could tell by my face, you know, we don't need another radio in this building, but I was trying to be nice to him. And then his wife had this gleam in her eye, and she said, you don't understand. And then Felix explains to me, he's an immigrant from Ukraine, and he lived in the Ukraine during the Cold War. This radio was purchased in the Soviet Union, made by the Soviet Union, and designed so that it would be very difficult to receive the frequencies of Voice of America.
Wow.
Then he looks at me and he has this gleam in his eye and he said, but I knew a guy. Meaning somebody who could, with his soldering iron and his coils, et cetera, retrofitted that. And he said, everybody in my village had one of these.
So they could get the signal.
So they could receive Voice of America. And we hear stories. People come. It's really heartwarming. People come into that building with tears in their eyes, and they say, "I listened in my grandmother's attic. I listened. I learned English in the special English." I mean, it's truly. So we tell the stories that Steve and the Steves before Steves, and how important their reporting to the rest of the world was. And so that's what you'll come away with if you come to the museum.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Today we're talking about the Voice of America, its namesake museum in Westchester, where the government-funded media outlet broadcast for 50 years is celebrating its 75th anniversary as a site. Joining us today is Museum Director Jack Dominick and Voice of America White House correspondent and Cincinnati native Steve Herman. Steve, according to an article you wrote in 2017, the VOA has a permanent seat in the White House briefing room, like a lot of the legacy media outlets. And you're in the fourth row between the National Journal and Fox News Radio. Is that still true?
That is still true, Michael.
All right. So what is your role in those briefings? We know that in this age, those briefings have become a spectacle in their own right. Are you called on frequently?
Yes, I am. Now, it's kind of funny because there's so much attention on the briefings and the frequency of the briefings, and they become quite the spectacle in the Trump era. But it is a tiny part of what White House correspondents do. And of course, with the briefings as infrequent as they are, you've got to find a lot of other things to do because there are so few briefings. But what the briefings are an opportunity to question the press secretary or others who come from the podium. And in this administration, there have frequently been members of the cabinet who have stood up there and to put questions and follow-up questions to them. Now, during the end of the Obama administration, these briefings were also occurring quite frequently and would last up to an hour, and they were never broadcast live on television because, at the end of the presidency, it's considered a lame duck presidency, and there's no real drama and excitement. But now they're big television viewing when they occur. The typical briefings were a real chance to drill down, and it's changed a bit in this administration because of the focus on the briefings, and so now there's a little bit more of theatrics to them. I sometimes prefer the off-camera briefings because people, including whoever is up at the podium, are not really grandstanding.
The tone of these briefings changed really right off the bat with the first one. I think we can remember, I think it was the first one where previous White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer barreled into the room and told you all how large the inauguration crowd was. I suppose you were in the room for that.
That was a bit before. I actually went over to the White House about a month after the inauguration. I saw that live on television, and I thought, oh boy, we're in for something a little bit different with this administration.
Well, let's talk about that, because the Trump administration is frequently deriding the press. The president himself often uses the term fake news. What are you witnessing there among your fellow White House reporters? Is this a more combative relationship between media and the U.S. administration than any time before it, from your perspective?
Well, I think it's more openly combative. There were definitely tensions between the Obama White House and the press corps. They were not seen as being totally transparent, and early in that administration, there was a White House aide who said that they were really not going to give a Fox News due consideration. And I've researched a little bit of history, and there's obviously been tension between the reporters and presidents going back to the middle of the 19th century, if not before. But you know, on one hand, Donald Trump is much more openly combative with his rhetoric. However, he makes himself quite available to the media. I remember one day we had six availabilities with him, six opportunities to ask him questions. So if he thinks that the media is so horrible, why is he talking to us all the time? And even though he calls the New York Times all sorts of names, he will invite their reporters into the Oval Office for extended sessions, both on the record and off the record. It's obvious that Donald Trump has a sort of a love-hate relationship with the media, and both what he calls earned media, getting all this free publicity, and his own individual efforts to go straight to his constituency with Twitter and social media and that sort of thing, he finds very effective. Of course, no one likes to be called names by the President of the United States. And also, I've been to the rallies where people are yelling at us, fake news and that sort of thing. And I think for the majority of them, perhaps they see it as some sort of game. But you always have a small percentage of people who maybe will take it much more seriously and individuals, whether they have some mental illness or are drunk, who will act on what they hear the president saying. And that happened to a BBC videographer recently. So, and the president has been told by very high level executives in the media that, you know, this is not helpful. He should knock it off and somebody's going to get hurt. For whatever reason, the president has decided to ignore that advice.
Sure. And Steve, you're coming into town to talk about this issue and more. You're going to be visiting the VOA Museum and Jack, the president of your museum's board. Is it Ken Reiser or Reiser?
Reiser.
It's Ken Reiser. Mm-hmm. I should have asked you that before we went on the air, but it's Ken Reiser. My apologies, Ken.
He's out of town.
Okay, perfect. Well, maybe he won't be listening. He said in a news release, quote, "Knowing and understanding the story of the Voice of America Bethany Station can inspire us all to become better citizens and work toward a more just, civil, and ethical nation." What do you think he meant by that?
Well, it's, again, kind of going back to it, what I said earlier, that around the world, you know, there are many areas of the world then and now are still cannot get straightforward, truthful information. And information is just key. Truthful information is key to any democracy, to any free people. And having the Voice of America and seeing what the Voice of America did during the beginning in the Second World War, but if you really look at the Voice of America, the impact of the Voice of America arguably was more during the Cold War. Because if you think about it, you know, Bethany went on the air in 1944. You know, the war wasn't over, but it was certainly on its way to being over. But then the Cold War started, and our friend Felix in Ukraine. In the Ukraine. Great example. We've had other folks say, I was given a talk in the senior center not too long ago, and there was this young guy in the back of the room, and I was given a talk about the Voice of America, and at the end of the thing, he comes up. This guy's like, when I say young, I'm old, so he was probably 40, but everybody else in the room was, my age. And he came up and he said, I really enjoyed your talk. I wasn't even supposed to be here. I'm a salesman. I came in to sell them something, and I saw this thing and I sat down and I listened. Then he explained to me, and he was obviously a Chinese American from looking at him. And then he explained, he said, that's why I'm here. He said, I listened to the Voice of America, and wow, I just had to, come to the United States to learn and to be a citizen. And we hear that all the time. So the impact, the global impact of information from the Voice of America then and now cannot be overstated, the importance. And it reminds us it's as important today, if not more so, than it's ever been.
There are certainly places in the world that don't have access to free and independent press. And Steve, that's going to be one topic that you address when you come to Westchester to talk. You're going to talk about the VOA's public diplomacy regarding disinformation campaigns from China and Russia. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, we have an effort called Polygraph, which is sort of a fact checker on disinformation that's coming out of Russia especially, but also China and other countries. And that is really one area of the world, the Russian-speaking world, where we are still very active in countering the message there. Now, we're not allowed to broadcast inside Russia, but a lot of the countries surrounding Russia, the main language is Russian. And I've been to these countries, such as Kyrgyzstan and Ukraine, and you turn on the television and it's all Russian news from Russia. So we're on the air there with Radio Free Europe in a 24-hour joint venture to counter that sort of programming.
And Jack, the VOA Museum is going through some changes of its own, maybe looking to upgrade, modernize, change some stuff. Tell us a little bit about that in the final minute or so that we have here.
Very quickly, we have a building that was built in 1944 as an industrial building, and it does not, doesn't cooperate easily to be remodeled into a inviting environment. So we've been spending a lot of time making it ADA compliant, and so there aren't steps, and so people don't have to trip over curbs, and et cetera. But I think if people come out, they'll be amazed at the transformation we've already made and continue to make in not only in the building but in the displays, especially in the exhibits. So open every Saturday and Sunday from 1 to 4. That's my little commercial there.
And Steve Herman will be coming to town to talk there. Steve Herman is the Voice of America White House Bureau Chief. And Jack Dominic is the museum director at the Voice of America Museum in Westchester. Thanks to you both for this very cool conversation. I appreciate having you on.
Thank you.
A pleasure. Looking forward to getting back there.
And Steve Herman will be at the Bethany Library on March 6th to talk about covering the White House for the Voice of America. You can find out more information on that at WVXU.org. Up next, a look at the myths and realities of coyotes. Should you be worried? We'll howl about that along with you. Give us a call, 513-419-7100. That's next on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.